Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Download the Ride List app today. Start sharing, buying, and selling your gear right now using your iPhone. It's fast, it's easy, it's free. The Ride List app. Download it today, Ride List. And this show brought to you in part by the Boardroom International Surfboard Show, presented by U.S. Blanks. This year honoring Wayne Lynch and the icons of foam Shape Off. And of course, great deals on surfboards, fins, wetsuits, gear, art, and skateboards. All the top brands. And the Surfboard Demo Morning presented by Sustainable Surf. Live laminating demonstrations highlighting new technologies, new resins, new carbons, and weaves. Also featuring the California Gold Surf Auction, an incredible array of vintage surfboards and memorabilia on the auction block. Live music, food, beverage, and good times. The Boardroom International Surfboard Show presented by U.S. Blanks. May 4th and 5th at the Del Mar Fairgrounds, boardroomshow.com. Bruce Brown's 1971 Oscar-nominated film, On Any Sunday, which brilliantly puts an inclusive twist on motorcycle culture, is as good as The Endless Summer. That's saying quite a bit. Both films allowed middle America to relax about these somewhat taboo cultures. The Endless Summer is, of course, the seminal surf film. It is our Gone with the Wind, our The Godfather, our Rocky. I never met Bruce Brown. Dana Brown, Bruce's son, carries himself with a smart humility, easy to talk to, considerate, a good listener. And while some have said that The Endless Summer was Bruce Brown's opus, I bet Bruce Brown and his wife Pat might argue otherwise. The Boardroom Podcast with filmmaker Dana Brown. Let us begin. Dana Brown, son of Bruce Brown, filmmaker. You have a long list of credits, but perhaps Step into Liquid, the most critically acclaimed movie. What was your New Year's resolution?
I guess, you know, honestly, it was just kind of to be happy and be positive.
How do you do that? How do you go about that? What does that mean?
Oh, just for me, just focusing on the things that are important, you know, my family or my grandkids or whatnot. You know, my dad passed away in 2017. So the year after he passed away, there's just a lot of, you know, it's a big void.
Yeah.
So just work hard and be a good person, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good New Year's resolution. Yeah. I might adopt that.
Okay. Good.
When was the last time you killed an animal?
Wow. Last time I killed an animal. I don't hunt. I used to hunt with my pop a long time ago. Last time I killed an animal. I don't know. I couldn't say. I think now that you have those vets that show up and put your animals down when they get old, I don't think...
Okay. I mean, so it might have been when you were hunting with your father a long, long, long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shoot birds and stuff, yeah.
Right, like what? Like quail?
Quail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
12-gauge?
12-gauge, yeah. Duck hunting. You know, like yeah. I don't do it at all anymore. He broke me of it when I was young.
Oh, really? Your father broke you of hunting?
Yeah, well, why? Just because, well, you're little. And those things hurt your shoulders when you shoot stuff.
It's so it's about your physical.
Yeah, I'd rather go surfing and stuff back then.
Gotcha. In my deep dive into research on you last night, which started at about 8 o'clock.
Right.
I got caught up in On Any Sunday. I ended up watching the whole film again. I know I saw it when I was a Grom way back when. There's an opening scene where there's a bunch of kids riding bikes. And I thought to myself, I bet Dana Brown's one of those kids.
No.
No? Huh.
No, we used to do the same thing. But Jeff Alter was in there and the Manderville brothers, Mike and Mark, and Jim Forrester. It's funny, I remember those guys. That was like, we were a little bitter, my brother and I. Like, well, we do that. Why didn't you shoot us?
Yeah, I can
imagine. So, no, we're not. But the Manderville brothers looked a lot like, even in at Marco Forrester in junior high school, people call me Mark or they call him Dana because we looked alike.
Yeah. And so you grew up in the Dana Point area, right there with just sort of a hotbed of surf industry happening back then. You know,
that was my childhood. I mean, you didn't think of it as a hotbed of surf industry action. It was just where you're growing up.
But. It was kind of fascinating just looking at the homes, like behind the scene where the kids are riding the bike.
Yeah.
And it's real kind of Dana Point suburbia. Yeah. For Ben, especially, it wasn't like little quaint little cottages like you'd see in Laguna Beach. It was more like, hey, let's Irvine Company, let's build some homes here.
Yeah, it was very wide open.
Yeah, there was wide open spaces. Yeah. Another silly question, not silly, but one that interests me. The last scene in On Any Sunday, where the guys are basically on sand dunes, is that down at Cantamar in Baja?
Part of it's in Cantamar, part of it's in Camp Pendleton. It was shot in a few different places, but yeah, it was.
Cool movie. Enjoyed the crap out of it. And what I really noticed was there seemed to be sort of a there was definitely, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like there was a template that your dad took from The Endless Summer, Bruce Brown's The Endless Summer, and kind of moved it over to this motorcycle culture.
Yeah, I think he wanted to tell a true and honest and positive story about motorcycle racing in the world of motorcycles. So if that's the template, it was.
Maybe it was more that just the narration was so heartwarming, you know, to hear your father's, that same voice that I'm so familiar with The Endless Summer, and to hear that.
Yeah, it's a hell of a film. It's my favorite, one of my favorite films anybody's ever made is On a Sunday. It got nominated for an Oscar. Didn't win, but it got nominated.
What do you remember? Which one won? It was a
film called Hellstrom Chronicle about bugs. Won.
What was it called?
Hellstrom Chronicle.
A documentary?
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
About bugs.
About bugs, yeah.
Huh. Somebody paid off the judges.
Probably. It's been, you know, they get it down to where there's not that many. I mean, we were real close to getting nominated. And Dust to Glory, another film.
Yeah,
I did, but it's hard. This year, there's a film, I think it's called Free Solo, that's about climbing.
Awesome movie.
That's nominated.
Oh, my God.
And it's so neat that that this genre can get nominated, because they usually ignore it. It can be real popular. It can have a lot of influence. It can last in the culture, like Step Has or Dust to Glory in the Off-Road or On Any Sunday or Endless Summer. But the Academy itself doesn't give as much credence or has it in the past. It's usually movies about starvation or, you know, pretty heavy topics.
Yeah.
So it's neat that they go to the toy department. I think I was really stoked to see that Free Solo got a nomination.
And did you see this movie, Free Solo?
Yeah. Yeah, it's unbelievable. I love those guys that do all the climbing movies. Mike Hoover, who is director of photography on Endless Summer 2, that's his background. He was nominated for a couple Oscars for short documentary and stuff. And those guys, it's so visual. It's unbelievable what they do. I love watching those things.
If I suggested to you that the reason that movie was nominated had nothing to do with the climbing or the cinematography or any of that, but the thing that pushed it over the top, because all of that stuff was obviously incredibly important, but it was the relationship with him and his girlfriend that I could see the Academy voters going, oh, this is sweet, that there was this tension between what was his name? Honnold? Alex and his girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know, there was that tension, and I could see how that helps it transcend just this cultural little niche market to, hey, guess what? Everyone has problems with their girlfriends.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what they look for. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's funny, the documentaries that last, like Michael Moore has never been nominated for an Oscar and for his stuff. And you got real influential guys. But yeah, I think so. I mean, that's just a hell of a good movie.
It was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
What was so fascinating about that movie, and I think you'll know what I mean, but we know what the outcome of the movie was. We know he lives. Yeah. But I'm on the edge of my seat.
Right.
Even though we know he lives when he's right. making that last climb. Yeah. And you're like, maybe he's going to fall even though yeah. we know he lives.
Exactly.
That's pretty good
yeah.
filmmaking.
I agree.
Yeah. Yep. Bruce Brown's, obviously, Danny, You're the Sun, Endless Summer, undoubtedly the most famous and frankly the best surf film ever made, in my opinion. Because it spoke to the core audience, but it did this thing. It bridged the gap to this great great mainstream appeal,
right.
transcended. What do you think it is about The Endless Summer? What was it from a filmmaker standpoint that you think helped it make this jump, this leap?
Well, I think he captured the joy and the adventure and the kind of this cowboy quality that surfing has. I think up to that point, it was more of a gimmick, you know, and that lasts. His choice of songs, Endless Summer, the original, has got to have, like, by and large, the worst surf of any surf film ever made, because he was getting off in Ghana and it's 2 feet, but he made the story like it was these guys. So I think you left and you think, like, oh, I'd like to get off my couch and try something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Jerry Lopez once told me there was a bubble that was floating around and Dad took a pin and, you know, you can only pop the bubble once.
Wow.
I think he's right. I mean, that movie just set. So, like, when I did Step in the Lick, right, at High Water, anything I do in surfing, it's like, it's just, you don't try to outdo The Endless Summer. Nobody yeah. does. Why yeah. would you? It happened that one time and that's it. You can do a hell of a great film. But all those elements are there in that film, you know?
Yeah.
And as part of filmmaking's a magic trick. I mean, I've said this before to people. It's like, you know, the guy's got the big top hat and he pulls the rabbit out and you figure the magician knows a rabbit's coming out. But I mean, sometimes you do a good film and you go, holy crap, you're a surprise to the audience. You know, there's the rabbit out
right.
of the hat.
And, yeah.
And that movie just has all those elements.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I mean, I try to pinpoint what it is. And sometimes I wonder if it was just great timing. Did timing have anything? 1965 or 66?
66.
Was the nation ready for something like this? Did we need some adventure in our lives? I mean, I wonder if that's like an unknown.
You know? I think that's an unknown. It's yeah. definitely something that's been written about and talked about. And it's something I couldn't possibly say that's not the reason.
Yeah.
Because all those things are reasons for something to be popular. But yeah, Vietnam and yeah, there's
yeah.
a lot of stuff going on. That was like a breath of fresh air, for
yeah.
sure.
From a filmmaker standpoint, Dana, if you look back on it now, are there any weaknesses to The Endless Summer that you and your dad may have spoken about over a whiskey or something some late evening and what if we tweaked this?
I think, you know, he did it for $50,000 with like one camera. So, I mean, if any of their weaknesses is like he couldn't spend that much time there and you're limited by lenses. But then you could look at it too, like that's what helped give it its charm
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if you're a filmmaker, whatever you're doing, you know, if you do your best and you do it, you kind of leave it out there. And if it lasts and it's great. And if it doesn't, that's okay. You did your best.
Yeah.
So I think that's how I looked at it. But
yeah.
I certainly wouldn't have talked to him about, like, Dad, what about the weaknesses? I tease him sometimes about some of the narration, you know, like the power of one of these waves will, you know, the strength
yeah.
of one of these waves power the city of Detroit for a week. You know, I go, Dad, you made that up. Even the name Endless Summer, I said, it's not, I think there's a line in there. It was, if you travel enough, it's always summer somewhere in the world.
Yeah.
It's totally not true. There's fall and then there's spring. And so I told him that. And there's a few people around. He just looked at me and went, he suck his teeth all the time. He go, you ever heard of Poetic License? I'm like, there you go.
Yeah.
So I think it's the greatest poem to surfing. I mean, it just is. And it's lasted all these years. Kids still
yeah.
discover it. My grandson, I had dinner with him last night, and my daughter and my granddaughter. And my grandson's telling me he surfs. He's all seven, lives here in San Clemente. And, you know, and he's come to some of the premieres of my things, and he goes, Grandpa, I was talking to, like, a teacher or something. And they're talking about surf filmmakers. And he goes, my grandfather and great-grandfather are surf filmmakers. And the guy literally went, well, unless one of them did The Endless Summer, it doesn't count. Like, because it's San Clemente, so maybe
yeah.
every little kid says
right.
that. And Kingston goes, well, he made The Endless Summer. And so King, you just told me that yesterday. I thought that was the greatest story. That there is you go. That's story. Dropping the bomb on him. Yeah, he made that. You know.
That is a mic drop right there. Huh?
Yeah.
How old are you, Dana?
I'm 59.
Okay, so I'm of the opinion that...
I'm 26. I'm sorry. I'm doing that for somebody in the room that told me you just never age over 26. I'm 59.
All right. Yeah. So Vicky's 26? That's is that what I'm to be? Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I look at Free Ride as sort of my generation's Endless Summer.
Yeah.
And you're probably right there. Maybe even it's probably Five Summer Stories for you. You're just a few years older than me.
Yeah.
And then after Free Ride, and in fact, was that sort of your Endless Summer? Was that the movie of your generation?
Yeah,
or was it what do you look at?
I was a little younger when I was 11, 12, I guess, when Five Summer Stories was making the rounds. But Free Ride, I remember vividly seeing that in, used to be a theater in Laguna Niguel. And it was, we went back and watched that thing. We couldn't believe the tube riding and stuff.
Yeah.
Like as the years have gone by, like, Sean Thompson's a good friend of mine and stuff. And I'll tell them, like, geez, it's still weird. Like, I'll be friends with them and go, like, I remember sitting in a theater going, I'd give my leg to be able to do that. I mean, that was like the most glamorous thing I've seen. And Bill Delaney, who made that film, is just the nicest guy in the world. I don't know Bill real well, but we've crossed paths. And he's a lovely guy.
Yeah, so that was sort of right there in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
As a teenage surfer in 1975 or 76.
Yeah, 16, 17. Yeah. You know, I think... In the late 70s, I spent a couple winters in the islands, kind of motivated by Freeride. Oh, I'm going to go and live there and make a name for myself.
Sure.
Didn't happen. I just scared the crap out of myself, but I had a good time.
Yeah. I hear you. You know, it's funny. I guess we fast forward into the 80s a little bit, and in some regards, Surfers the movie, also made by Bill Delaney, I believe, would be sort of the movie that kind of tapped into that generation, perhaps. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
And then as we go into the 90s, we get VHS and videotape, and of course Taylor Steele's Momentum comes along, and it's that generation's Endless Summer.
Absolutely.
Of course, none of these movies transcend to the mainstream like The Endless Summer, but as far as the core audience,
absolutely,
every generation has their one. And 2003 comes along, and we get another mainstream surf film, Step Into Liquid, which is your film.
Right.
A great film. Critically acclaimed film. A film that I took my children to on the big screen. Enjoyed the crap out of it.
Thanks.
Very well done. And I'm one of these guys, and you might have this experience too, but I've seen a few surf movies, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm a little... fatigued, I guess you could say, unless it's a really good one.
Right.
And you made a spectacular movie, and I went into it sort of, okay, we'll go see this movie.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, I was blown away how entertained I was by it. So good work, obviously. And I want to talk about the film a little bit, because one of the things I think was, and talk to me about this, how important is music to any movie? Is it underrated? Music, because the music in Step Into Liquid was so good.
Yeah,
it carried some segments.
It's super important.
Yeah,
the music. Yeah, I think anybody's a serious filmmaker would tell you that. I mean, it's that other character, because a lot of it, especially with surfing or off-road racing, there's a lot of visual. You're letting the audience kind of come to it. So to pick the right piece of music is super important.
Do you ever listen to music, or before you were making it, and going, oh, you know what, I need to have a segment wrapped around that song? Like, have you ever listened to music and went, you know what we need for this piece of music? Like, basically music is driving the segment.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, not real long segments, but absolutely. I think if you took Step Into Liquid, there's a song in there. I'm not going to remember the name of the band, but it basically like a punk song. And the guy keeps yelling Carpe Diem, you know.
Is it Slightly Stupid?
Slightly Stupid as a song, and it doesn't matter. And I heard this song, and I was going to avoid like a wipeout sequence because we had enough wipeouts. And I heard this song, and we shot at Pipeline and didn't exactly get what we want, but we had some good wipeouts. And I ended up making I said, no, we're going to do like a traditional minute 10 wipeout sequence, because I mean, this song just seemed to work. Like, you heard the song and put it in at the images, and I was like, okay, never mind. Plan B here. But sure, you can hear a piece of music, and I just made a movie called Dust to Glory, the number two, mm-hmm. which is like a sequel to the Bomb movie. And there's a movie, a song that ends that with these kids like washing a racing Volkswagen down, these kids that are from battered families, and they live in this home, and that home sponsors the Volkswagen, and the Volkswagen's back from the race. And we filmed it. I said, this is the sweetest thing if we could just play this without, you know, the movie basically ends, you'd have this great last scene where I'm not talking, the audience. And then there's a song we heard then, too. I mean, I heard that a year and a half before we cut the thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's the song, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
It's always a little bit different. Everything's a little bit. Sometimes you're motivated by one thing and sometimes the other.
Can you recall music that you really, really wanted, like a song or something that you just couldn't get?
Yeah.
Give me an example of a story or a nightmare, okay, as the case may be.
It was we shot Cortez Banks the first time those guys rode that for Step. It was pretty early in the shooting, and that was something that Sean Collins had set up, and I talked to Sean, and he said, well, if we do it, you know, we'll meet you out there. So it happened, and the day was great, and we got it, and it made all the papers, and we're sitting on the good footage because we had a stabilized mount. And they had an old ASR show, or somebody called me and said, is there any possible way? It might have been Sean Collins. Like, you know, we can play it in our booth. You know, we're just going to play it in the booth. So Beautiful Day had just hit by U2. And I was playing, so I just put Beautiful Day underneath this footage, and I just started falling in love with it. This is, even though that song got huge, and I go, this is perfect. And we cut that thing, and we had it always in there as temp, and I was being told by people, we'll be able to get this. We'll be able to get it. And man, that film was being locked, and they went, we can't get it. And it was like, what are we going to do? And the composer's like, I don't think I can write. So we ended up, somebody listen to this, and this is no offense to who did this. Somebody got a U2 cover band. That what you hear in there is a thing called Happy Day or something. Uh-huh. It was just different enough, but it wasn't the same song. So that was one that stood out because it had always been in. That scene was cut like you see it for a long time. Mm-hmm. And people, that would be the one you'd show in their edit room.
Mm-hmm.
You got anything to show me? I'd always show them that. And they go, oh my God, that thing's fantastic. You know,
right.
And other scenes you're always working on. But then when they said, yeah, well, I think they were going to let us use it for just a lot of money, and we couldn't afford it. So it's like,
that's usually the case.
That's my one song that jumps out that I was disappointed classic. With.
Because I know that when Sean Thompson did Bustin' Down the Door, he had a lot of really cool songs in there, like Bowie and Stones. And I remember he came by Surfer Magazine and he showed it to us. And I'm like, are you really getting this music? Because I do a little, I'm a amateur filmmaker, so I understand the drama of getting music, but I think he had some problems with some of those.
It's hard. You always meet people early on, they go, not a problem. And in Endless Summer 2, Dad wanted, there's a scene, it might be a Pipeline 2, with it. He wanted the song Wipeout. He was just going to lean right into this cliche thing, you know, Wipeout and these Wipeouts. And then whoever owns the publishing rights of Wipeouts got a hold of us, and it's like $50,000. Dad's like, no way. And but did the same thing. The composer wrote something that's got this similar drum beat, but it just varies. But it is amazing.
Yeah.
When you're making a film, you go, well, how much could this really be? Sometimes it's quite a bit. And sometimes they give you a really good deal. So
there's a song, Life is a Miracle, by Pato Bantan, which is in Step Into
that's
Liquid.
Yeah. I love that song.
And I was brought in to clean up a really horrible surf film that I'm not even going to name the name of. But I loved that song so much from Step Into Liquid that I used it for this little scene.
That was the
such a good song.
It's such a good song. Dave Kaplan, I think is his name. Surf Dog Records down there
in Encinitas.
Yeah, so Dave was our music supervisor on Endless Summer 2. And then I did Step Into Liquid and I said, hey, Dave. And he just had guys on his label and send them to me. And that was the thing after the U2 deal. We didn't have a song for the very end of it. I think what the composer wrote, I wasn't real happy with.
Mm-hmm.
And it dawned on me, maybe you need lyrics. That way I don't have to talk, you know.
Sure.
And boy, I came across that song. And I just, that was one of those jackpot moments.
Yeah.
And I knew we could get it because Dave said, like, if you got anything. And I went, hey, you know, I found it. But yeah,
I think that's where we got it, actually, now that I think about it. I think he basically goes, here's what's available. And I went, oh, that's the song from Step Into Liquid. I love that song.
It's such a great song. It's weird to think that song just gets passed around like that. But yeah, I think that's a great song.
Well, so we talked a little bit about Endless Summer, then Five Summer Stories, then maybe it's Free Ride, then maybe it's Surfers the movie, and then the Next Generation is Momentum, Taylor Still's mm-hmm. movie, and maybe the next generation of a feature-length film is Step into Liquid. Are we ever going to see another feature-length film from the surf world? Do you think that the audience has the...
It's a good question. I mean, they that Momentum thing that was on HBO.
Yeah.
I mean,
documentary about, though. I mean, a
very
making
specific
of,
about, yeah.
But how about this? Guys. Even a better question, maybe, is a nationally distributed feature film.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought about, I think surfing's, I mean, you got, like you said, you got to do it right. The problem is people don't do a good job. There's fatigue.
Yeah.
But boy, as a subject matter, I stayed in San Clemente last night. And I walked down to the pier this morning, and there's like five kids, like shivering. They got like softies, and I'm thinking, what? Did they already go out? And here comes their parents, like to pick them up. They're like, okay, put the boards on top. What's that story? You know, and you see people that, you know, I've helped with people with autism and stuff, and you take them in the water and you help veterans. And that's just that part of it, let alone how good the surfers are getting. So I think for sure there's the subject matter there.
In many ways, it would be sort of that same paradigm that is Step into Liquid. And On Any Sunday is like this, too, where you've got this little segment of a story. It's basically a large 60 minutes where you've got five or six or seven different segments that are tied in with however you transition those things. But they're all different stories underneath the umbrella of Isn't Surfing Bitchin'.
Right. And it's not to say you can't do a character-driven piece. But, I mean, when I look at surfing sometimes, like maybe what joins it's the theme more than an individual. I think I've – because people always ask about Endless Summer. Like, would you ever think of – that'd be a hard one. Because back when Dad did surfing, surfing was – between here and here, right? And now you got longboard, shortboard, towing, this, that. There's an expectation of the kind of waves you get. So when I look at surfing, I'm always looking at more like the humanity. Because you know you're going to get the action. There's great cameramen out there. People got places dialed in. You know you can show up and kill it action-wise. But, you know, what's the story?
Right. The conflict, perhaps, right?
Yeah, the conflict or what joins them all, you know, all together. But I think for sure. They make movies about every day. I mean, how many detective movies are there? A zillion five, you know?
Yeah,
they can do a good surf movie or two. Wouldn't be bad. Or
a quick break in the podcast to tell you about Ride List and the Ride List app for your iPhone. Download the Ride List app and start buying, selling, and swapping your gear with other like-minded individuals. This is a peer-to-peer buy-sell swap network. Surfboards, mountain bikes, skateboards, snowboards, wetsuits, the Ride List app. I'm looking through it right now, and I've put the filter on for just mountain bikes, and I push apply, and oh boy, all sorts of stuff showing up here. Cool stuff and great prices. A Giant Stance mountain bike. There's a 2014 BMC Speed Fox. 50 millimeter carbon wheel set. A 2017 Trek Sky. And even a Schaefer leather biker jacket on here. I'm going to go real quick and put the Surf Water Sports filter on and click apply. And here we go. Killer Channel Island surfboard. Here's a Stuart 6'6 fun board. All boards are fun, right? Here's a Chemistry 5'6, a Focus Hawaii surf sup, a Mayhem, a really nice Lost Uber driver Mayhem for $450. Looks brand new. Here's a GoPro. All sorts of cool stuff on the Ride List app. Man, there's a lot of cool boards on here. Ride List, you guys, check it out. Download the Ride List app. Do yourself a favor. Buy, sell, share, swap your gear with fellow like-minded riders like you. It's a peer-to-peer marketplace. Ride List. Download it today. Now back to the podcast. Would you rather have great footage and average music or great music and average footage?
That's a great question. Boy, that's a coin toss, but man, because I was going to say great music, I think, but then...
Not bad footage, but great music with average footage.
No, if you have really good music, you make images resonate more than the opposite, you know.
Right.
I think...
Music is more powerful.
I think so. I mean, it just helps complete it for people. You know, we did that scene, the Cortez Banks scene that... somebody wanted it that helped with that Project Neptune, which is the name of the reason we all went out there. Is it possible to use some of your footage? And I was going, sure. Here's a bunch of source stuff, but don't cut it. Like, I don't want it being seen like we're going to cut it.
Right.
And guys I was working with going like, Danny, you can't.
Yeah.
They don't trust me. They're not going to do it quite like we did it. And that thing was around for a year. Nobody ever once went, I saw that footage there. Because if you see that scene, we use a lot more of these sweeping long shots, and they just did this more kinetic thing. It was hard to tell it was the same footage. Mm. And the music, I think, was worse. Mm. Ours was grander, and you know, we had the Richard Gibbs, the composer. So yeah, probably music.
Yeah.
Music and an approach. You can make footage look a lot of different. Like you said, if it's okay. If it's terrible.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
I think about times when I emote during a film and I've really excavated it, and it's because of the music.
Mm-hmm.
The music is what makes me personally feel the emotion.
Or sometimes there's that moment. You don't know why it's work. I watch movies. I love movies, you know, good movies, and I'll watch them 5 times and still not understand why something hit me a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a movie, Hell or High Water, not Keith's movie about body surfing, but the Jeff Bridges one with Chris Pine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple shots, the way they set that up and people walking, that you just feel this empathy for the characters. You get a sense of the place. And yeah, there's music there too and sound effects, but it's like, I'm always stunned. I think I've seen that movie 5 times. And I get into the movie, I forget like what I'm looking for, because that Western cowboy thing is very similar to surfing. It's similar to off-road racing. The thought of, you know, how would you frame something and enter in the frame? Uh-huh. And I still get caught up, but there's something about
when you get caught up, do you emote? Do you cry?
I don't cry.
Do you cry at movies?
I have cried at movies.
Yeah.
What makes you cry?
Field of Dreams?
My kid, JD, my oldest, who's now the mother of my 2 grandkids, my oldest daughter, we went and saw Field of Dreams whenever that came out, late 80s, and she's just a little thing, and he goes to play catch, you know. That's your dad. I want to play catch. And I'm like, and I glance down at her, and she's like all of like half my size, and she's just staring at my, Dad, are you okay? I'm like, it's okay.
That's awesome.
I think I find it easier to cry sometimes or feel that in movies than you do in real life sometimes, you know.
Yeah,
because there's a different, if you're just watching a movie, you're just watching it, and there's no expectation you have to react to it
right.
or anything, so it's probably a little more vulnerable sometimes.
I wonder what the music was doing in that moment, in that scene, even though I know you were with your daughter, which is
I'm sure the music
was just twisting it.
Yeah, because I think that movie was before Endless Summer 2, and I had this idea like, oh, this is grand and sweet, and you know, you're using temp music, and I think we had temp music, and I put that under. I thought, Dad's going to love this. But it wasn't quite working because I think, oh, this is very specific to that scene. And Dad's like, this is kind of schmaltzy. You know, I'm going, yeah, I just want it bigger. Good movies make me emotional. Yeah. I just don't go and crying at anything.
No, of course not.
Yeah. I'm horrible with horror movies. I get scared the hell out of me. Like, oh, if you take me, I'm like, yeah, jeez.
Do you actively go see horror movies?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
When Step came out, I got this agent. They go, you got to get an agent at a real big agency. And okay, and you want to do a fiction film, Dana? I go, yeah, you know, if it works out. We're going to send you a script. We had a courier coming. This goes on for like 3 weeks. Here's the script. Do you want to do it? And they're all horror films. Uh-huh. Like the scripts would scare you.
Right.
And I'm like, would you like to do it? I'm going, I don't. First of all, I don't even know how to make a table go across a room and cleave somebody in half. I don't know. I don't know how to do this. And then I go, but, you know, thank you for sending it. Finally, I go to the agent. I go, look, man, why do you keep sending me horror movies? This is the one genre I'm not. I'm not into exactly, you know. He goes, well, your demographic, young males really love your films, and young males really love horror films. So the genius has figured out that I'd be a good. But I thought that was funny, and I love that he admitted it. And I just went like, I don't think.
That's
although funny. You know, like that, the Jordan Peele Get Out, I thought was great, which I guess you could call a horror film. I mean, there's things in that genre I like, but the full blown just
over
people
the top.
Getting.
Yeah.
Slashed up.
Yeah.
And my youngest daughter, who's, you know, 5'2", 105 pounds, she does, they don't faze her at all.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, my other kids, me, ugh.
Yeah.
She's like, it's great. Look. It's like, somehow it seems too real to me. Like, that could really happen. That guy could really come back from the dead.
In many ways, maybe the filmmaker has succeeded.
Without question. No, I'm hooked like right to the gills.
Yeah.
Like I'm buying it, no matter how dumb it is. Like I'm like, oh no, this could happen. This could happen.
The we were talking a little bit a second ago about this concept of surf films that could be made. Mm-hmm. Subject matter that's out there that needs to happen, in my opinion, maybe.
Right.
And I'm going to throw some ideas at you. Tell me what you think. What about Dane Kealoha as a story? I think there's conflict there. I think there's some major sovereignty issues, like from a deeper theme. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Dane Kealoha would be a fascinating one. I don't know his story that well. I've done a little research. I think there was some drama in South Africa regarding apartheid and Dane.
Yeah, I think so.
I think there were some issues with him not getting a world title because of some of the points that maybe were stripped from him, mm-hmm. or he got kicked off tour because he didn't. And again, my history is botched up here. I think Dane Kealoha is a fascinating one. I think he's the forgotten Dane is the way I like to phrase it. You know, what do you think about Dane Kealoha?
Possibly. Great surfer. Absolutely. Yeah.
And have a list of guys? Do you have a something in your back pocket where you're like, these are stories that need to be told that we should look at?
Sometimes, I mean, as odd as it is, some of them are, I've been, you know, chronicled to death. Mm-hmm. I'm always thinking, like Tommy Kern and I go back forever, and Tommy's a great friend. And I always think Tommy's just a hell of a, he's Tommy.
Yeah.
And there's something there.
You mean nobody's really told the story properly?
Well,
because you and I know Tommy in probably a different way than your average Joe in Jersey. Or
well,
whatever.
I think Tommy's just tough. I mean, Tommy's like, you know, he's Tommy. He's a very quiet guy. But he's super funny and creative. And
that's something you'd like to capture if you did.
Different, I guess. I mean, and maybe I'm even looking at more shorter things. Like, that doesn't have the overriding arc, like what Dane went through or
yeah, maybe they're just portions of a larger umbrella film, but they're like little, like, portraits.
Yeah, Tommy, I mean, God, almost any of those guys are successful. Usually you hear their stories and you're like, wow, that's...
You know what I'm fascinated by is the 28-year-old pro surfer, like a B-level pro.
Yes.
That gets kicked off tour, and what in the hell happens to his life?
Mm-hmm.
The midlife crisis that happens at age 29 to these guys that have no schooling, that have really, they're just, I mean, it's kind of a scary place. And I mean, we've all faced that on some level or another in our lives. So I think everyone can relate to it. But it's really crystallized, I think, for those guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a million guys like that. Like, where's you know?
We actually talked, well, I did a film called High Waters. It's about the Triple Crown and stuff. But that was... in its working stages, and there's always a difference between the working stages and what people want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back, people go, well, John John's the movie. Well, John John was 13. I mean, yeah. We didn't know he was going to become John John. But that was one of the points. That it's not just the surfers spend everything to get their picture. There's all those photographers. There are half of those guys. I mean, they're just hanging on, hoping. And there's something fantastic because they're all just kind of on this ride. They've all let go of the edge of the pool and the kind of the chaos or I don't know, it reminds you of what sports must have been like 100 years ago, the big sports, where it seems big from the outside, but a lot of these guys are just, you know.
Scraping. Walking a fine line,
sure.
Right?
Like
right.
Back in the day, why didn't that guy play more? I mean, back 100 years ago in baseball. Well, they had a farm, and they didn't get paid enough to play baseball, so they stayed.
Right.
You know, now that'd be unthinkable. Like, yeah. They don't. And most of these guys don't get paid like that either. And that's not really why they're doing it. You know, they're doing it for that moment. I mean,
what about other, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, I just was saying, just to go back to the camera guys. I mean, you stand there at the beach at Pipeline, there's millions of dollars in lenses. I mean, these guys, there's so many lenses.
I've got one I want to sell you.
Those things are so expensive. And you're looking at them, and they're just clicking away. And yeah. If you're there, you know, a while, every day, you see them, and they're working their butts off, and you're thinking, like, what is the... And they'll come up to me or something like, pleasure to meet you, and, you know, can get some advice. And it's like, the advice is...
Get a CPA.
I spoke at film schools and stuff, and, you know, the kids are like... Because they always like dad's story, like my story, because you're kind of the little guy that can be with the big boys occasionally.
Right.
You know? And I go, well, if you just love telling stories, you're going to do this regardless. In other words, you're going to get a job at a bank, but you're going to drive your... loved one nuts by doing it, then you're probably in the right thing. But if you're doing this because you think you're going to make a lot of money, so I'd ask, like, how many people do this because they just love it, not really concerned about the money, maybe that'll work out. And it seemed like half the hands would go. How many people are here because they really want to do it and they also want to make a good living? And just, like you said, become a CPA.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee at all, nothing close.
Yeah.
And the people that usually do well in film, the reason they even have money is they invested what they got. Why, you know, yeah. It doesn't generate. You're not Brad Pitt. You know, nobody's paying anybody that kind of bread.
Right.
Or you could go do commercials. There's good money in commercials, but all the kind of flashy go to the premiere stuff.
Yeah.
It's not the soundest.
No.
Financial bet. But if you love, if that's what you were going to do anyways, and you can live and live decently, then great.
But the story is the guy that doesn't pull it out. Like, to me, the interesting thing in surfing, one of them, because everything else has been played out. Like, I've seen enough films about how spiritual surfing is. Like, I get it. Okay, please don't make me another one. You know what I mean? But it's the one where it's like the dark side of it. I would, what if I proposed to you a concept of, like, the guys that quit surfing?
Yeah.
Like, do you still surf? Do you still ride waves?
Yeah.
I do too, but I often wonder, like, I think of guys like Carl Ekstrom, or there's a million guys.
Yeah.
Like Hinson, even.
Yeah.
How come they quit surfing? To me, that's so foreign, you know, but people do that. And I'm starting to see it too as I get older. I'm starting like, oh, you know what? Maybe when I'm 60, I won't be surfing anymore. Yeah. And that's just something that I held so dear to my. So this is a subject matter that I sort of think is interesting.
Yeah.
The concept of quitting surfing.
It is interesting.
Everyone wants to start.
With Mike, maybe Mike stopped just because he wasn't. I mean, Mike was so good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one thing I can keep surfing because I never, what happened to him?
Like, well. So, I mean, his ego was tied to it and he lost some of it.
Maybe. I don't want to speak for Mike.
No, I know you
do. I know my dad quit, didn't surf the last 7-8 years of life because he got this tendon thing on the palm of his hands. There's a name for it. Anyways, he couldn't paddle
some sort of
easily.
Carpal tunnel or something.
Yeah. And that was one reason it kept him out of the water. But yeah, I'm surprised. If you can paddle out, I don't know why you wouldn't surf.
Right.
I can see not going to a crowded spot that you're getting.
Right. That's just
harassed.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't imagine not.
So then you would see why the concept of quitting surfing is sort of fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, like, I could see that as subject matter.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
I'm trying to get you to do some of my films.
There you go. Well, I'm doing one on Dad, by the way. I got to work that in before.
Oh, no, we're going to. We're going to.
All right.
We're going to get there.
Radio Land.
We got this. Is a podcast. This goes for 4 hours.
Land. Oh, good. Good.
There's a scene in Step into Liquid, real quick, because I'm a wannabe filmmaker, so I'm fascinated by this. where there's voiceover of Rochelle Ballard, and she basically goes, you know, surfing's great, blah, blah, blah. You jump from the concrete into the water, you're stepping into liquid. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, did Dana direct that, or did she actually say that? And then in the editing bay, you're like, oh, there's our title.
Well, here, so we called that Top Secret Surf Movie when we started. Mm-hmm. And then there was some attention from the surfing press and stuff, and everyone wanted a name. I'm like, I'm bad at naming stuff. Let's see how the movie looks. I don't want to name it. Then it was like, no, you better name it. And I said, well, it's really about all these different tribes. The first thought of that movie was it was supposed to be one day. Like, this is one day, and this is all these things that happen in the world of surfing in a day. And then we had that device, and it just seemed too fictional to justify what we had. Anyways, that was going into it. So what are you going to call it? So I finally went, it's about the water. It's about, we'll call it Liquid. Liquid. Oh, that works good. They actually made hats. I have one in the car, which is Liquid Crew. So it's Liquid, Liquid, Liquid. Surfer ran a little article, Liquid. Sure enough, somebody does a check and goes, you can't use that name. Paramount owns Liquid. It's trademark. Oh. But all the people like Rochelle in Tahiti thought we were calling it Liquid. So I'm not so sure she didn't say stepping into Liquid, like, aren't I clever? But then when we had to change the name, I went, then what are we going to call it now? We've had enough press with Liquid. And I went, can we call it Stepping into Liquid? Because then Rochelle, which I love that line, and she's so great.
I mean, it comes off really natural.
Yeah.
Which is why I was
no, like, no, I didn't. I
he's behind there going, no, I need you to say this.
I try not to do that. I mean, I've done that, but certainly not till the end of an interview and you go, hey, do you mind saying these three lines? But it never seems quite natural. So I avoid that, doing that. Just let him talk.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like what you're letting me do, ramble.
No, this,
again and again.
You're in the perfect format for rambling. What's the greatest dramatic sports film ever made? And I know the answer, so this is a quiz.
You mean like a fictional?
Yes. Well, docudrama, perhaps.
What is it? What's your choice? I don't know.
I like Miracle, which is the story of Kurt Russell.
The hockey deal?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I just saw that like 5-6 months ago. Yeah.
I think that's a really underrated one.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Yeah.
And he's an underrated actor.
He'd play a good surfer.
Because most people would say, De Niro fight film.
Oh, Raging Bull.
Yeah,
right,
most people go, oh, Raging Bull. You know?
No, I think Miracle's right there. Yeah, that's a good one.
What about you?
Not sure.
All right.
I don't really rank things. It drives my kids nuts.
Do you think that This Is Spinal Tap is the greatest Christmas film ever?
It could be.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Elf's pretty darn good, too.
Elf is the one.
I give myself an elf every year.
You mentioned Henson. You know, obviously, Henson and Robert August, the film Endless Summer followed them around the globe in search of this perfect the summer that never ends. And I was researching, I saw that Mike Henson called your dad brilliant and genius, mm-hmm. and the reason that the movie was so good, and I don't think that's too much of a stretch or anything, but it obviously wasn't always roses between Mike Henson and mm-hmm. your father. And Mike Henson sued your father, and the lawsuit, I think, was thrown out of court or something, but mm-hmm. Did you ever see your father respond, like, you know, behind closed doors about the situation that went down there? And is this a dead horse that you're just sick of talking about?
Well, I'm not happy to talk about it because I wasn't directly involved.
Right.
But to answer your question about Dad, no.
Yeah.
I think Dad felt really disappointed.
Yeah.
And I think towards the end, like Mike came to Washington when mm-hmm. the thing went in the Smithsonian. Mm-hmm. But I think just their feelings hurt.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. And my dad wasn't one really to badmouth people behind their back. He'd just be like, you know, big sigh. And,
yeah.
So, yeah.
All right.
And I've seen Mike a few times. I like Mike a lot. My brother and Mike are pretty good friends. And, I have nothing but respect for them. And that was not a fun deal. And it was exacerbated by the fact that occasionally, it seemed like every 7 years, somebody would write about that. It would just show back up again, like, not the endless summer, the endless bummer.
I feel like I just dragged it out myself.
No. It's okay. I mean, he's gone. I just felt I felt bad for all involved. I mean, obviously, I'm on Dad's side.
Sure.
And he's one of the most honest guys I know, but I just, that was no fun.
Yeah.
And it's no fun when everybody knows people's dirty laundry anyways.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
I do.
If you get asked and you feel like, God, it's bad enough this is happening, but to to have to kind of comment on it. Yeah. And it's not even my thing, you know?
Yeah. I feel like shit for talking about it. I was, like I said, I was researching and I was, let's talk about this cool new thing that you've got going. From what I understand, and fill me in where I'm wrong here, you and your dad, a few years ago, decided to go around to some of his old pals and just basically film B-roll, more or less, just get some great footage in the can of you and your father, I mean, and his old buddies.
Yeah.
So take it from there, please.
Well, initially it was, I was in between films and I thought we'd make like a 25-minute, 30-minute thing of taking dad on the road. My mom passed away in 2006. Those two were like beyond partners. You know, she was a co-driver when he rally car raced. They were like thick as thieves. So she got cancer and passed away. And he'd be in the house a lot, you know, at his ranch. And it was like, A, we wanted to go on the trip anyways, because it was impossible to get him. I mean, he has a 50-acre ranch. He doesn't have to go anywhere. But it would be like, so we thought, we can kill two birds with one stone and maybe shoot this fly-on-the-wall thing of the trip that we just make a 20-minute deal of, and it shows up on the internet.
So back up. So the trip, the catalyst for the trip was, I thought maybe it was like your dad was like going, look, let's meet these guys sort of one last time because I'm getting up in age.
No,
these guys
are getting... That was my idea. Okay. That was the idea. Okay. To talk him into it, he was like, but Kenny and Grubby and the guys we see, Kenny Roberts, Gordon Clark, he was happy to see them.
Oh, for sure.
So we, you know, I had to rent the motorhome, get the, you know, my buddy to drive and all that stuff. And then kind of just, he took his dog and him and we went up to, the farthest north we went was to see Grubby and Jerry Lopez up in Oregon. And we saw Jack O'Neill in Santa Cruz and Rick Lawwell, who was in on a Sunday, and Kenny Roberts. And I'm probably forgetting somebody.
Yeah.
And then we took him to Hawaii. Like 2 weeks later, we flew him to Hawaii, rented a house right there by Pipe. And we're there like 2 weeks as well. And he saw Buffalo and Henry Priest and Mark Healy and Joel Tudor. You know, people just, it was right. It was in January or February, so that contest season was still... There's still quite a few guys coming through. Saw Kelly and people come up and talk to him.
But cool.
So it was this smaller idea, and then I got an offer to do Arnie Sunday, the Next Chapter, which I did. That took like 2 years, and right when that thing ended, I started doing Dust to Glory. And Dad would always go, like, are you going to do something with that? Like, you should do something with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to, Dad, as soon as I finish this... Dust to Glory, and that was finished in October of 2017, and then Dad passed away in December of 2017, and he literally my dad wouldn't give you too much shit. It wasn't like you got to do it, but he kind of like do what a dad would do to his son, like, well, did you clean your room? It was like, you know, you're gonna finish that thing. And the minute he passed, it kind of dawned on me, like, well, now it's a longer movie, because now it's not just this slice of life. We can tell a little bit of the past and put this guy in context more than I was planning on.
Right.
And
that's interesting. You feel like you have more artistic license because your father's not there to sort of look over your shoulder?
Well, that, and he's gone. I mean, he gives you this in. This gentleman's not here anymore.
Right.
You know, so it was like, well, this opens up this possibility. And then Henry's not here anymore, and Jack O'Neill died, and June Lawwell, Mertz. So there's a lot of dead people in the thing.
Right.
And it was like, wow. So the more historical stuff is, you know, here they are, and here's what they were then, and here's the bigger picture. Hobie was, I think, our first stop. Hobie passed away. And so it just gave it more possibility.
Yeah.
And you spend those first few months after, you know, your dad dies and all the lawyer, you know, all the legal stuff with the houses and the the estate. And I just happened to be talking to a guy that used to be the head guy at Red Bull Media House. And he's, I'd love to be in business with you again. Are you thinking any new movies? And he just kind of said, he says, is there anything you've kind of got done and you'd like to finish? And I went, yes. Yes, there is. So he made a few phone calls, and I met Luke, the editor out there at Schaefer. Is it Schaefer or Schiffer? Schaefer Chop Shop.
Schaefer.
Schaefer Chop Shop. They're great guys. So they just kind of went, you can cut it here, do this, what do you think? We'll be your partners. So I kind of went from, it was on the back burner to the front burner within, you know, a month, quick. You know, you know, you make movies. A lot of times you have 50 meetings, nothing's ever really happening. This was, went kind of from
boom,
and did it,
And so when you're like, okay, we're, this thing's rocketing into the fourth dimension here, speed, are you writing out a storyline? Like in your mind, you've got basically talking heads. Like, is there conflict and resolution, or is like, what does the storyline look like from your perspective?
Right now, if you're in the edit room, there's like 3x5 cards all over the place of what the scenes are, what we're trying to say with the scene, how they relate to dad, how they relate to the history of surfing. But so it's kind of, when it starts, is a little bit all over the map. But you know, Luke, the editor on this, he's like 26. And he said, you know, because what I love about this is that this story reminds me like what my family would be. He's from Dana Point, surf guy. And I went, that's something you always want to remember. You want anybody watching this to go, yeah, the guy did this. And yeah, his friends are all. But at its core, they're just people. Yeah. You know, this is your crazy Uncle Larry. This is the eccentric friend that anybody can identify with. So, and I love that he said that. So then you don't get so caught up in the surf history and, you know, when gods walked the earth and all that crap, that just makes it harder for the viewer to relate. Because I think Dad and Gordon and they're so unique and funny and sweet. And it's inspiring in the sense that these guys aren't, they're special people, but they're not like extraordinary. Like if LeBron James is sitting here and you're going 6'9 and he's 260 and the guys, you go, well, I can't do that because he's been touched by the gods. But like somebody, whether it's Dad or Hobie, they're more like, oh, this is just this kind of like can-do spirit, and they're funny. And so it's neat when they're together, because they never talk about how double bitching they are. They kind of give each other shit all the time and laugh, you know. And I think you saw the sizzle reel, but at the end of that, Grubby, you know, Dad's like, let's go inside and tell Grubby jokes. And Grubby's like, no, this is the story here. And that kind of sums it up, you know. So it's got a, so I'm real proud to be doing it and get Dad off my back. but yeah, I think it'll be a neat, it's a neat slice of life of all those guys.
You know? For sure. Yeah. I'm excited. The sizzle reel looked great, and I'm excited about it. And frankly, when the concept of you and I doing a podcast came about, or actually before the podcast, when our mutual friend said, hey, I'm doing this thing, maybe, or Dana's doing this thing. And he said, Endless Summer. And I went, oh, my God. Yeah. Please. I got Endless Summer fatigue.
Yeah. Well, after his passing at PBS, did something. There's been quite a few things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You must have some of that. Do you have Endless Summer fatigue a little bit?
Sure.
Just like, I don't know, like.
Because it's just a great, I mean, it's more than just that name and stuff. But sure. Yeah. A little bit.
But this sounds really, like, to me, and you know this phrase, Dana Point Mafia.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real hook from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's involved anywhere.
Well, we did with you guys in the editing. Well, Hobie's in it and Grubby and just talking to
Matt's maybe. The guy who runs this place.
Oh, yeah. Matt's. And Dick's like one of Dad's oldest friends. They've always been. I remember all those guys when I was a baby.
So are there other interviews that you could do if you went with that sort of concept?
Yeah, we're going to.
Okay.
I mean, right now we're trying to get the rough part of it pretty put together. Then it's like, you know, it'd be great to talk to here is them or this. Or I was just talking to JP out there.
His father.
Yeah, and he was saying they all get together in Capitol Beach like once a month, or he's talking Mickey. And I said, well, next time that happens, tell me, because I'm just cutting this thing in Irvine. We can come down and just shoot that, not make a giant scene out of it. Yeah. But here they are. These guys exist. You know?
That is so classic.
Some of them are statues. They're Doheny, and some of them are at the coffee shop. You know.
Right.
So there you go.
There's a crew of old guys down where I live, like Carl Ekstrom, his brother, Woody.
Yeah.
Tom Keck, old surf photographer. I just ran into these guys at the coffee shop the other day. They meet every...
Yeah.
And they used to meet at the Chart House because the guy who's... One of the guys...
Joey Cabell.
No, it wasn't Joey, but it was the...
John Creed.
It wasn't Creed. There was the... Who's the paddler guy? Anyway.
Okay.
I'm going to lose my...
Yeah.
I'm having an old man moment with names. But anyway, these guys all... hooey up and circle up every week and have coffee. And I run into him, and I even told the guy I'm with, I'm like, do you see those guys over there? Do you know who those guys are? You know, like I was starstruck, but he's like a bunch of old dudes.
So Tom Keck sent me, like this is 3 months ago, and I've not responded to you, Tom. So if you happen to listen to this, I apologize. You're looking at your messages and it says Tom Keck. It might have been an emailer. I'm like, Tom Keck. Click on it, and it was something he ran across, and it was a membership card of the Wind and Sea Surf Club in my dad's name. It said Bruce Brown, 1965. I didn't realize they had cards for the Wind and Sea Surf Club, but it was very sweet of Tom to, like, he ran across it, figured out, you know, my email or my phone and sent it to me. So I meant to thank him. It was just this photo of this laminated little card. Because I didn't know about that. The Butch and Dell and those guys would have a card.
Like, they had a lot of shit.
Sit in the shack? Yeah, I got my card. I'm okay. But yeah, it was really sweet, you know. And that's the other thing. Those guys, they're not full of themselves. You know, they're such a nice. That's what's inspiring to me about them. None of them. Grubby, they're just people. They're not like waiting for anybody to treat them any different or act. And I think that's why they got so much stuff done in their lives. And that's why, like you said, no, those are legends. They're inspiring.
Yeah.
To see them all get together and still make the same dumb jokes and laugh and be tickled, you know. And to me, if the sport of surfing has any legacy, it's that. It's stuff like that that you see.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can go to a retirement home and there's people that have been accountants or whatever their whole lives, and they're not happy.
Yeah.
You know.
They don't have that fellowship.
No.
That bond.
Or just that goofy sense of humor, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
They all seem to stay so young, kind of, you know, not, of course we're all dented by life, but not, you know, wounded by it, you know, anyways.
So cool. So it sounds like you've got a pretty fabulous framework for this film. You don't have a working title. Or do you have? I know you said you're not good with titles, but
no. Well, I think
it doesn't really matter.
They're calling it like "Lives of Endless Summer," Bruce Brown. I mean, I had like two other titles. You know, to be honest, you know how this works. Like they go marketing, and Rose is a rose. If it's a good movie, people like the name. If it's not a good movie,
doesn't matter.
I mean, Momentum's great because it had all that influence, right? Yeah. Or Free Ride, you know, whatever. And I've always said that about The Endless Summer. It's like, you know, well, the title was so great. And I was like, if the movie didn't work, nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, when does that ever happen?
Yeah. But the title carried the movie?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know the movie sucked, but that title. What a great title.
Miracle is a great title.
Yeah, exactly. And that's tall. That was tall. They must have been thinking, like, how are we going to do this? I always thought Kurt Russell would make a great, if you're doing a fictional surfer. Like when you think fictional, Sam Elliott's another one.
Yeah.
You go, those are the kind of guys that have that kind of charisma, but you could, that seem like some of those old
Bridges kind of.
Jeff Bridges, absolutely.
Kind of just because of that great character in the Lebowski movie.
Yeah, yeah. But there's that kind of natural Western cowboy loose quality of those guys. It's still charming, and people of all ilk could get it. I mean, sometimes I always think that if you're from the West Coast or surfer, isn't that guy great? Other people kind of from inland, like, no.
Yeah.
But there's some that just cross that line that you know, everybody adores.
There seems to be a real connection with ranches and riding motorcycles and going to Idaho that this whole crew that you talk about. When you talk about Grubby and Jerry and Dick Metz and your father and all of these guys, they were on Hobie. I mean, these guys were all riding motorcycles.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
going on big rides. So they did really kind of cross
all kinds
over.
Of things, sure. And they had. They go sailing and boats and commercial sword fishing and they didn't sit on the couch too much.
No,
those guys.
Well, what else am I missing here? What else can you tell me about the movie that I need to know?
I think it's going to be a really good movie, and it's a lot of heart in it. I'm not good at pimping
this tearjerker.
Oh, you know, I hope not, because I mean, obviously, you know. These people died. I mean, no, not too much. I think there's a lot of real poignant stuff.
Are you in it?
Yeah.
Good.
Because I was on in the trip. My brother and sister are in it.
Yeah.
I think we're going to go shoot. Here, spoiler alert. I think the last scene we're going to go shoot my grandson.
Cool.
He was 8 surfing down here. He's like now Mr. Shortboard. Every day he's going out. But just that thought that just keeps going on.
Do you have imagery of your father with your grandson too?
Yeah.
That kind of like make that happen.
Oh, yeah. He loved the grandkids, yeah. Yeah. And he's like a little blonde. It's like the same.
Do you think the film, do you ever concern yourself that the film will be too insular to you guys and not, I mean, well, I guess the main theme is family, obviously. Yeah. So everyone can relate to that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm very aware not to, I think anybody's a filmmaker or writer or something, you have to be so self-critical. Yeah, I don't think I'll fall into that trap. I'm usually talked into it by other people going, no, you should leave that in there.
Right.
This last movie I did, Dust to Glory, it starts with inside camera car, me as a co-driver in the race, which I did this first stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in there just to shoot the other guy doing it, and I got out at pit one, and they brought me back to Ensenada. Anyways, the editor on that was like, oh, you cut the scene. And I go, and my head's all bouncing around. And I go, no. And then it dawned on me, no, this would be good because I can make fun of myself here and we could do all this expository stuff. But even then, it took three guys to go, Danny, it's great.
Yeah.
They already know you're the narrator. But I'm pretty aware of that because we've all, we've all had that experience of watching a movie going, boy, this person just loves himself a little too much.
Yeah.
And you don't want to. That's one of those lines you hate to cross the audience.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm already narrating the stupid thing. And, you know, it's more like, look at me. Look at me is okay to a point. But
do you write like the first scene? Like, I mean, how much writing do you do in this thing? Like, do you basically set this thing up through narration, through voiceover? Like, this is a, or I mean, I'm just curious as to how
it depends. Think. Right now, well, I hate to talk about rough cuts. Right now, it's literally me sitting on a stool on camera going, I just
let me tell
out.
You about my father's friends.
Yeah. This is where this came from. This is what we're doing. So then you just jump into the movie without having to have that kind of, what am I looking at here? And I got that from Widows, a movie that Steve McQueen, not our friend Steve McQueen, the director Steve McQueen now, but he just suddenly showed up. It was at the AMC theater and he's sitting there and he goes, it's a movie. I went, that's a hell, and it was a fiction movie, but I thought, oh, maybe we'll do that in this movie because that way we just get it all out of the way.
Right.
Here's
it's
who
so
I am.
Simple and intuitive.
And then it just goes, then you just go into the.
But maybe I could see a filmmaker brain going overboard and going, what's the convention I can use instead of making it simple? Let me make it difficult.
Yeah, you know? Well, I try to start, like, as Luke knows, Luke's just standing outside this place right now. But as Luke, you know, you try to start simple. And it's easier to go simple and complicated, right? It's easier to, so we try to keep it as like straightforward on the rough cut as possible and then go like, oh.
Because at least then you have a skeleton.
Exactly. Because the hard part's when you think, oh, we'll figure out how these two things relate. And it's really difficult sometimes to do that.
Yeah.
That's how I work anyway.
Yeah.
My dad used to always say, kiss, Dana, kiss. And I mean, keep it simple, stupid. Because, he was my apprentice. I mean, he hired me to put his old surf movies back together.
Yeah.
And then I did something for Greg Knoll, put Surf for Surf back together for him, and then Dad goes, you want to do Endless Summer 2? And that was 2.5 years. But my whole apprentice, I would not be working in this business if it wasn't for him.
What would you be doing?
I don't know. I was writing and stuff before. That's what I liked. Because I took film in school, and I had a camera. But then it was like, well, I'll go to L.A. and become a PA. And, you know, it's just like,
did it feel too much pressure, like follow the father's footsteps?
Well,
is there a lot of that kind of like, I can never fill these feet?
No, you just make your own footsteps. I mean, you don't worry about that. You worry. So I just put it aside. Like, I like film class. I like film. I just thought it's too complicated and too much money to get into that. And then when he called, and it was, I lived by him up there in Santa Barbara, and it was like, okay, cool, I'll do that. And then that was, by the time that and Endless Summer 2 was done, it was like 5 years working for him. And then he just came down the hall and said, well, I'm retiring again, so you know. But I had enough chops at that time to realize, I'll go do this. And I went and worked with Ira Opper and Matt Warshaw on the Surfer's Journal for a couple seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then by that point, you know, and you're younger, like, yeah, I know everything now. So then decided to step into Liquid. And here's now, you know, going on 30 years of spending my job.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Did you ever poke your head into your father's office when you're doing Step into Liquid and going, hey, I got a quick question here.
All
I
the need time. Some, yeah. I cut it in Long Beach, and he'd come down and visit, but sure.
Yeah.
All the time.
Cool.
I mean, that's what most of them going to miss. This would be the first film that I'd done that I don't run it by him.
Right.
Because he's the one guy, he got how to tell stories. He understood that he was a great sounding board.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. So we don't have a working title? I like Dana Point Mafia.
Mickey's not even looking up anymore. She's like, she's I think it's called what is it? Bruce Brown, The Lives of Endless Summer or something like this. I can't remember.
Dana Point Mafia, Vicky, just remember that. That's a marketing move. It doesn't even have to be in the main title. It can be a subtitle. Anyway, I'm going to shut up now. Dana, thank you so much, man. Thank you, appreciate Scott. It. Have I left anything out?
No, is there something, so.
Vicky, that we need to get across here that I want to help promote this best possible? You're like, Scott, you said enough. You've done enough damage.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think so.
At Dana Point Mafia. No, just kidding. Okay, we'll get all that social media stuff out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Dana, thank you very much.
All right, Scott. Thank you, bro.
Forget about it.